Want to drive greater success in social commerce? With Deloitte's latest creator economy research, you can. After surveying over 500 creators and 500 brands, our insights are helping CMOs and marketing teams harness the power of content creators. And not only that, but how to do it well. See for yourself by visiting cmo.deloitte.com today. Your website is the front door of your business, but the way teams build and optimize it is broken. Stuck between inflexible templates and cumbersome code-dependent solutions, there's a better, faster way. Enter Webflow, a visual-first platform that empowers you to create freely. Now you can ship web pages in weeks instead of months and save millions in development costs. These are the real results for companies like Orange Theory, one that I love, Dropbox, and IDEO. Get started today at webflow.com. Webflow, more than a website builder. Hi, I'm Jim Stengel, and I help major brands find their purpose and activate it, and the profits follow. For 7 years, I was the global marketing officer for Procter & Gamble, where I oversaw the marketing of hundreds of brands. You may not know it, but the CMOs, the chief marketing officers of all of your favorite brands, are trying to connect you with your favorite products and services through purpose. And on this show, I delve into how they do it. Today, my guests on the CMO podcast are three young hotshot marketers who attended the Cannes Lions Young Marketers Academy. Every summer for the last 65 years, the global advertising industry has gathered in the south of Europe for a week of celebration of and learning from the best creative work in the world. This year, the Cannes Festival is virtual, and we are recording a special episode of the CMO podcast to be part of the virtual programming. I have a unique history with Cannes. Until 2003, the festival was for ad agencies and media companies. That year, when I was the global marketing officer at Procter & Gamble, we were the first client to bring a contingent of leaders to Cannes Lions to elevate our standards for creativity. Well, it worked. P&G won Marketer of the Year 5 years later. Since I left P&G, my team and I have helped Cannes Lions design and deliver training for CMOs and young marketers. Today, my guests on the CMO podcast are three young marketers who have participated in the training at Cannes Lions. We have Molly Matz, brand manager of the Off Insect Repellent brand with the SC Johnson Company. Sam Jones, previously with Red Bull and now founder of a company called Generate. And Grace Sobey, who is the head of YouTube brand marketing. Also joining me as a moderator in this panel is Suzanne Tosellini, an ex-P&G marketer and a growth consultant for the Jim Stengel Company. For the last 9 years, Suzanne and I have designed and delivered training for young marketers and CMOs at the Cannes Lions International Festival of Creativity. Welcome, Suzanne, to the CMO podcast, and I want you to say what is your favorite part of leading the Cannes programs for young marketers and CMOs?
So I think my favorite part of the young marketers is all the emotion and excitement with which they leave at the end of the week. And you just know that these people are going back to push the envelope on how creativity is done in their companies, and they will, and have done, we've seen it, that they do create Cannes winning work and high quality creative out of the back of it. And I think my favorite part of the CMO Accelerator is some of the just the humanity that comes into it, just the learning that this is a business of people and how they interact with each other, and that it's as much about that as skills and learning and new data.
I look so forward to this discussion with you and with Molly, Sam, and Grace. This is our conversation with the marketing hotshots. Welcome, young marketers, to this special edition, Cannes edition of the CMO podcast. Sans rosé, no rosé this morning, just espresso. And I also want to welcome my colleague Suzanne Tosellini, who will be co-hosting this episode with me. And Suzanne, before we turn to our three young marketers, I want to start with you. Could you give our listeners some background and perspective on what inspired this episode of the CMO podcast and why we are so excited to be here with Sam, Grace, and Molly?
Sure. So for the past 10 years, Jim and I have partnered with Cannes Lions to run a Young Marketers Academy within the Cannes Festival of Creativity. And so each year we pick 30 to 40 top talent young marketers from client-side companies across all industries, all regions around the world to attend a curated week of seminars, workshops, interactive discussions at Cannes. And then 7 years ago, we added a similar kind of program for senior leaders. So more like for CMOs or rising CMOs. It's called the CMO Accelerator. And that content is all curated and designed for them for an interactive 2-day session. So each year we've brought in 5 or 6 of our top talent young marketers into that room to share with the CMOs, you know, what it is that they're looking for from leaders and companies at that time in their career. And interestingly, each year it's one of the top rated sessions in the CMO Accelerator. And so we thought it would be really fun to share with all the listeners on the virtual Cannes this year what it is that experience is like for the CMOs in our room. And so we're going to as Jim is going to share, we have 3 of those marketing hotshots with us today. And we're going to focus the discussion around what this top talent looks for in terms of leadership and culture at organizations today.
Suzanne, I want to start with my first question for you based on that. This is always the top rated module with the CMOs. Mm-hmm. Can you explain why? Why is this so provocative for them when we bring in these young people and they talk about their expectations?
So interestingly, I think that's a good question. I think what I've observed over the years that we've done it is a very simple answer to that, which is it's kind of shocking to me how surprised that the CMOs are every year that they don't have these kind of candid conversations with young people in their organizations more frequently. And so I think they all tend to leave going, why am I not walking the corridors and just having human normal conversations with people in my organization? So I think it's a top rated session because people don't take the time out of their day to just get to know people in their organizations.
And I wonder if that's shifting now with this health and economic and social crisis we're going through. And maybe our 3 guests can shed some light on that. And then one last question for you, Suzanne. As our listeners may have noticed, you have a bit of an Irish accent. And I also know that you are fluent in German. Can you tell them a bit about that?
Sure. Yeah, so I grew up in Ireland. My mother is Irish, my father's German. So I grew up in a bilingual household living in Ireland. And and I've married an Italian, so we throw Italian into the mix too.
Beautiful. Okay, now I want to turn to our guests. And I want to briefly ask each of you to talk about one person or one experience at Cannes that had an impact on you. And one lesson you carry with you to this day. So one person or experience that made an impact and one lesson you carry to this day with you. And I want you to be brief, insightful, pithy, as I know you are. So why don't we start with Molly, who is coming to us from Park City, Utah, where she is quarantining, doing her work, and enjoying nature.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks, guys, and thanks so much for having me. I'm very excited to be here. I would say I loved hearing Fernando Machado speak. I think he's just so inspirational.
Who's the CMO of Burger King?
CMO of Burger King.
And before that, Unilever.
Yes. So he has had, you know, an amazing career in, you know, both in CPG and in food, and has had a huge impact everywhere he goes. And I've continued to follow him on LinkedIn since Cannes to just see, you know, the kind of impact that he has and the kind of marketing that he does and that he supports on his teams. And I think the most impactful thing that he shared was how they go about being so bold and responding so quickly to the things that are happening around them. And I think that's especially relevant today as we think about how big companies can respond to what's going on in our world. And, you know, he talked about putting so much trust and faith in his teams that are running social accounts, running digital, running the advertising, you know, really putting that trust in the marketers and their relationships with the agencies to put the right content out there at the right time. And I think that was just incredibly inspirational as we think about how do we make big companies more nimble and how can they respond faster to everything going on in the world, especially, you know, in the situation that we're in right now, as you said, you know, from a health, economic, and social perspective. So I think when Fernando, you know, we're on a first name basis now, Fernando and I. Well, I think when Fernando,
I love that.
I think when Fernando was talking about, you know, how they operate so quickly and how he put so much trust in his people, that was really inspiring. And it was something I continue to take with me. And it's something I push my organization to do as well.
What did you do when you returned to work with that insight? Did you meet with your team, talk to your boss, go to see your CEO? What did you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I talked about it with everyone I possibly could because I loved that concept of operating quickly and putting trust. And so we actually had a marketing activation that we were doing shortly after Cannes, where rather than going through all of the approval processes that big companies have, we actually just got all of the right people on a WhatsApp to approve things kind of as they were coming and make sure that we were keeping the content relevant and, you know, dispersing it quickly into our media channels. So it was something that I was able to socialize with my team and then act on really quickly.
Super. Grace, how about you?
Can I have two if that's okay? So the first one is probably Wendy.
That's fine. and you're coming to us from LA right now. You're quarantining in LA, working from home.
I am working from home, quarantining from LA, which is definitely, as the accent suggests, I'd rather be in LA than in rainy UK at the moment, as much as I love my home country. LA is a little bit nicer at the moment. But yeah, so my two are probably Wendy Clark, who at the time was at Coca-Cola and is now CEO of DDB Worldwide. She was phenomenal. And she was one of those people that I went to go and watch speak. And I had no expectations of what she was going to be like. But from in terms of a female leader who is just the top of her game, absolutely incredible. And she completely, at the time, it was just as the World Cup had happened. And she talked about how Coca-Cola had it was when everyone had a war room and a command center at that point, and then how Coca-Cola really sort of revolutionized that point, that approach to really react in real time to various things that were going on in the World Cup. She talked about that, and it was just as well, just at the point that they'd done, do you remember the Coke bottles with the different names on? She'd completely done the whole personalization approach. Just her ability to kind of have a very open approach and try things and test things and fail fast and fail often. And I think at the time, that was, I think, in 2013, 2014, and that approach was really unheard of. This test, learn, repeat approach was really a new sort of style. So I think that one was phenomenal. The other one that I would say was incredible, I think it's available online, and actually, ironically, I think it's probably never been more relevant. So there's a guy called Blake Winfrey. He did a talk called Can Creativity Trump Racism? And it was, I mean, this is literally maybe about 5 years ago. It was all about getting people, particularly the Black community, getting more people creatively into in the industry. And I think it was, for me, that was a talk that completely opened my eyes to, like, what am I personally doing around that topic and how can I make sure that the teams that I hire moving forwards are creatively diverse. And so I think that was an incredible, like I say, especially with what's going on at the moment, I think that talk was phenomenal and really ahead of its game. And like I say, it's available still online. So definitely worth watching in the context of everything that's going on. But for me personally, yeah, I think it was a really phenomenal talk.
When you went back to your team after being in the Young Marketers Academy and having this whole experience, is there one thing that you did, one habit, one ritual, one practice you put into place when you returned to work?
Do you know what? And it's ironically something that I still use. There was a brief template. We had a session that was a brief template, literally on how do you write a good brief, which seems like such an easy skill. but actually, it's not something that we learn enough of. It's not something that if you go to university and do a marketing degree, very rarely it's touched upon in such a practical way. So we did this session that was literally drilling down to how do you write a good brief and really starting from like what is the human truth and the insight that you're trying to convey. And so I think still to this day, I still use that worksheet and I still go back and go, have I answered all of these questions and do I genuinely believe in this brief? Because I think too often in the marketing industry, we give agencies briefs that are kind of like, oh, we don't know what the problem is that we're trying to solve. Here, please, can you solve it for us? And if you don't know the problem you're going to solve, then surely like the agency's not going to know either. So I think it's about really drilling down on a good brief helps people with good work. So yeah, that's probably the biggest thing that I learned. And I still hold true to that. And I still think it's one of the most valuable things I learned.
And I want to underscore that for our listeners. I just interviewed Fiona Carter, who spent many years at BBDO. She's now the chief brand officer at AT&T. And I asked her, you have experience on the client and agency side. What's one major piece of learning? And she talked about the brief.
Yeah.
And how bad we are as clients in writing an inspiring, succinct, fabulous brief to inspire creative work. So it's a really, really important lesson for our listeners. We can always get better. And it's our accountability as clients to do that.
I also think the other thing that I'd add to that is that, like, from an agency side, it's so important that you have a good relationship with your account manager so that they can say, do you know what? This brief is not good. We are missing an insight. So you can have honestly that relationship, and then you can empower them to say, no, this brief isn't working. Go back and write the brief. And you're like, okay, thank you for that. I agree. I completely agree. And let's work on it. So yeah, I think empowering agency side to be able to have those very real conversations when a brief, they don't believe in the brief that you're trying to put forward, is critical.
And Wendy Clark, who's just a phenomenal leader, she's now with Dentsu.
Oh, Bill, sorry.
Yeah, no, it's okay. It's recent, but she went and she's taken on another challenge. So we have to have her back to talk about how that's going.
She's just amazing.
Sam, I want to bring you into the conversation. Sam.
Hi.
An experience or person from Cannes and a lesson you've taken forward.
Sure, absolutely. So from my side, I'd say it would be more of the experience, and it's probably slightly cliched as an answer, but I remember leaving Cannes and it was as if I'd had a shot of marketing adrenaline straight into my veins. And I went back to my company, which was Red Bull at the time, and I remember sharing these experiences, these insights, and some of the things that we'd seen from others. Because in my experience, we were in the team that I was in at Red Bull as a global brand manager, we were deliberately quite insular because we didn't want to necessarily always look at competitors, because from that side, you're emulating rather than driving forward. But to have this moment in the year where we really stepped out, we really went and just got absolutely engulfed in the industry. I remember leaving so excited and so giddy again. And it was fantastic to take that back to the organization.
Excellent. And is there a habit, practice, or ritual that you brought back after Cannes, after all this adrenaline and inspiration?
So I think it was really this ethos of working with your agency as friends and as colleagues, as opposed to as an agency. And that's very much true, whether it's a short-term project over the course of a year in a specific market where you've just brought an agency on board, or if it's a long-term relationship. I think this sense of bringing people in, sharing transparently metrics which they may otherwise not have access to or be aware of, this trust, once you start that, it becomes a lot easier to have frank and honest conversations, especially when things are going right or wrong, and you can say, here's what we need to do. We're all aware of the metrics, and let's find solutions to move forward. So I think that sense of working as friends rather than or as colleagues rather than as a client and an agency. Mm-hmm.
So before moving to the next question, and it's the next question is a power question. It's what every CMO wants to know. I want to ask Suzanne if she wants to comment on what you just heard. Is there anything that you'd like to underscore or anything you'd like to reinforce?
I guess the biggest observation I have from these stories that you've just shared is like it's music to my ears hearing how focused you are around briefing and creative courage. But most importantly, creative courage without the discipline of a brief is just blind courage, you know, whereas if you partner that courage that you talk about and building an organization that can embrace creative courage like Fernando does, but you have the knowledge and discipline of how to write a brief, then you can really do it. So I love it's, you know, that's music to my ears.
Thanks, Suzanne. Now here's the power question, and every CMO wants to know this, and I want each of you to answer this question. What works to motivate and inspire you to give your work each day your full energy, your full potential, showing up as your whole self at work to give everything you have? That's what everyone aspires to do with your generation. So let's go in reverse order. So Sam, why don't you start with this one? What works to motivate and inspire you?
Sure. I mean, it's a fantastic question. For me, I think there's a two-pronged answer. So the first is the people management side, where, of course, all of the things that the people really know or that good managers should know, and that's that you need to ensure people are healthily challenged, and challenged not in the sense of given impossible deadlines or enormous quantities of work, but challenged in the sense of intellectually challenged. And coupled with that, they need to be given the room to execute. So I think all good managers, all good CMOs, all good people managers really know this, and they give, in just the same way we were talking about briefing an agency with transparency and with clear KPIs, when you're working your best, you know what is expected of you, you know what you need to achieve, and you're given the room to achieve it. And of course, there's that mutual trust, so that when you do have a question or a challenge, you can propose some solutions and go back for guidance. Or if you know what you're doing, you can come back with the results at the end of it. So that would be the first prong on the people side. And I think that's relatively easy. I mean, that's not hard. All decent businesses know that. The second part, and this is slightly tougher, is I believe, and this might just be personally that, and perhaps a reflection that I'm a difficult employee, but I believe that to really get the best out of me and to really have me motivated, I need to be working for a brand that is aspirational and inspirational and ultimately that I believe in. And you could put this into the box of saying I need to agree with the purpose, or you can frame it how you like. But I'll give you a real example right now. If I was still at a major business, what I would be looking at right now with a very critical eye is all of the world-changing events that are happening. And I'd be critically thinking about how my company has responded. So first, of course, with COVID-19, and secondly, with Black Lives Matter. And if I look at the former, to give a really clear example, what I would want to see is transparency, clarity, and decisiveness from my leadership. So one thing I said to my team immediately in March, and this was 2 weeks before the UK went into a lockdown, I said, guys, we're going into a very challenging period, and there's going to be three things we need to do. Number one, we need to respond. Number two, we need to rebuild. And number three, we need to recover. We're going to respond by cutting costs. We're going to lose staff, and we're going to need to put out fires. We're then going to rebuild by revisiting our fundamentals. We're going to look at what's changed about our consumer, and we're going to need to adapt the business. And then we're going to recover by implementing new revenue streams, implementing different marketing approaches, and ultimately by maintaining growth. Now, when I sent that message out, albeit only to a small team, we all rallied round, we all understood, and we all drove a lot harder and a lot faster. Now, if I think and I step back and I put myself, say, at Red Bull, where there's 10,500 employees, or at Google with 115,000, or P&G with 100,000, I would really be looking for this transparency and this clarity of messaging. Because once you have that, you can really give everything. But without it, with that piece of the puzzle missing, there on a human side, people start to ask questions, people start to wonder, and that's not when you're going to give your best work. So that would be the two sides.
That's beautifully said. And if I could put you on the spot a bit, who do you admire and how they've responded to this crisis we're in, health, economic, social, and who do you think could learn from the lessons you just laid out?
Oh,
sorry about that.
No,
it's interesting, right? It's an era of accountability, right? We need to be honest.
Absolutely right. So, I mean, to be frank, I would say because I don't know the internals of a lot of businesses, I could only speak from secondhand news, and I'm always wary of the information that you see, whether in business magazines or publicly. So I wouldn't yet know how to answer that. But what I can tell you with absolute certainty is if you're an employee in one of these organizations who are doing it right, you absolutely know it. And if you're one in an organization that's doing it wrong, equally, you know it. And that will be reflected in 6 to 12 months when we see attrition, when we see talent move, and ultimately when you see that where the winners will come through acquiring that top talent.
Yeah. Agreed. All right, Grace, we're going to come to you next. So it's a tough act to follow, but I know you're up to it. So what works in LA as you sit now? But through your career, and we talked this when we were together in Cannes, what works to inspire and motivate you?
Yeah, so I, from a leadership perspective, I feel like the best leaders that I've always worked for are the ones that are very action-focused. Especially when you work at big companies like Google, like Unilever, it's easy to get caught up in the swirl quite quickly. And actually, the best ones that I think are just phenomenal leaders are like, great, yes, let's do the strategy work, but let's also focus on what we're putting out of the door. I think my current, and I'm genuinely not just saying this as an apple to the teacher, but my current director is a lady called Angela Corton, and she is phenomenal at this, absolutely phenomenal. She has a very open door policy. You can go to her and say, I think we should do this. And she's like, that sounds great. How do we kind of empower you to do that? So to give an example, the coronavirus obviously took everyone by surprise, very quickly escalated and everyone's in lockdown. And we came up with this idea called With Me, hashtag With Me, which is all about this idea. For 15 years, people have been doing things alone together on YouTube. So whether that's, doing makeup tutorials or whatever it is, could we empower the entire world to connect through With Me and do things together through YouTube? So even though we're alone, we can do things together. Pitched that idea to Angela and she was like, yes, let's make it happen. And before you knew it, we had like Venus Williams uploading With Me videos on like how to play tennis at home and all sorts. And she says, Angela's got this very sort of, yes, let's do it, fail fast, fail often. And actually, I think that approach means that she doesn't fail because she's very, how do I empower the team to go out there and do good work? But in doing that, she also has a very clear sense of what the brand is, where the brand needs to be and where we're going. So it's not kind of shooting blind. It's very much knowing what works and what doesn't and then empowering the team. She's very much a hurdle remover in that sense. So her job, and she says it often, her job is just to remove hurdles. What can I do? How can I make this easier for you? And how can I empower my team to do incredible work? So yeah, I think that's probably the biggest thing that I find really, really works for me in terms of just empowering people to mm-hmm. do great work.
Has Angela changed in the last 12 weeks in terms of how she's leading? And has she established any new principles, ways of leading that are interesting for our listeners?
Do you know, I don't think she has changed. I think she's become more phenomenal. She literally is an incredible, incredible leader. I think as everyone has, we've had to adapt. We really have. Everyone has to adapt to the ways of working. So she has done things like she will openly say, especially at the start of coronavirus, which was an incredibly difficult time, she would say, people are not going to operate at 100% and I don't expect my team to operate at 100%. This is a difficult time. And I think just having that vulnerability, I mean, who stands there and says, you can't operate at 100% in this world? Like, that is a bold move for a director to say, especially in a work culture where it is work hard and really kind of prove yourself and people are determined and very ambitious. To turn around and say, actually, don't work at 100%, I think is, a bold move. But then she's done some incredible things in this time. So, for example, she has, on a Tuesday and a Thursday, we had a meditation session for half an hour. And she would turn, I mean, she's incredibly busy, back-to-back meetings, but religiously every Tuesday and Thursday, she will be there because she knows that by turning up to those things, empowers the rest of the team to say, it's tools down. If you want to come and meditate, you can, et cetera. So I think things like that, really caring deeply about the team on a very personal level and showing that you care and acknowledging when things are hard, acknowledging that we don't always know what the right things to do are. And I think that sort of vulnerability is key to great leadership.
Yeah, beautiful. Okay, Molly.
Two tough acts to follow.
The last of the three. They are both tough acts to follow. Beautiful lessons in both of them. So how about you? What works to, we talked about this in Cannes, but what works to motivate, inspire?
Yeah,
you?
I believe at Cannes, when I was asked this question on the panel, my response was loads of money.
Yeah, I remember that.
Which still stands. Yes, no, loads of money will definitely, no, I'm totally kidding.
Okay, we got that. We can move on now.
Yeah, so money. No. So in all seriousness, I think a company that has a culture of development, right? Constant, you know, evolving and developing. And I think that comes with people, it comes with brands, and it comes with the company as a whole. So very similar to what Sam said on the people front, I want to feel like people above me, people around me, people below me are invested in my career. And I think that's very common among the millennial and Gen Z generations is, you know, the concept of a long-term career at one company is kind of out the window at this point. And so we want to feel like we're being invested in, or we'll go somewhere else, right? That's really the feeling among our generations. And, you know, on the people side, when it comes to leaders, I really want to echo what Grace said about vulnerability. One of the things I love about the organization I work at now is that I feel like it's a very flat organization. I feel like I can go to my leaders and be honest and open with them about how I'm feeling about, you know, the work that we're doing, the culture that we have, you know, just having that feeling of, you know, I'm comfortable with this person, even though they're 3, 4, 5 levels above me. I feel like I can approach them and really be myself and tell them how I'm feeling and be honest. And I think that's incredibly important. On the brand side, you know, Sam had said something about, you know, I want to work for a brand that I'm passionate about. And I completely agree. But when you're in CPG, sometimes you're working on brands that are just not sexy. And so how can we challenge who our brands are to make them sexier to consumers and sexier to employees, right? Because if you're working on, I'm not going to use examples from my organization because I don't want to get in trouble. But if you're working on, you know, if you're working on Depends, right? If you're working on, sure, you know, adult diapers for incontinence, right? Like that's not the sexiest thing. But pushing yourself to do the work of evolving that brand into something that consumers can really connect with, it becomes an even more fun challenge because if the brand isn't sexy on its own, it's now your job to make it cool. And I think that's something that's really important, especially in fast-moving consumer goods. So how do we challenge ourselves to continue to evolve both internally and with our agency partners? You know, like we all said, a good brief is really important, but it's, again, even more important when you're working on a brand that you've got to communicate some very emotional benefit to your consumers when what they're really looking for is function. So how do we use our agencies to connect with consumers and challenge our own brands? And then from a company perspective, you know, last year, I was at Cannes last year and the theme was purpose, right? And just working for a company that has purpose, has direction, knows where it's going and knows where it's been and how that impacts its future. That was by far the biggest takeaway for me from Cannes last year. I still talk about the statistic about how consumers believe that brands and companies will impact their lives more than governments. I think that especially in today's world, that is so incredibly relevant because, you know, as you think about how companies can impact the culture around us, you know, people are expecting more of us than they are of politicians. And that is so incredibly powerful as we think about, again, how we continue to develop and evolve and grow.
Mm-hmm. Super, Molly. You just got promoted onto a sexy brand, right?
Very sexy. I just got promoted onto Off Bug Spray. So you got to keep those mosquitoes away.
I'm not being facetious. She just winked at me. I'm not being facetious. Well, you think about, you know, when you stop people from being bitten by mosquitoes, you're talking about not just discomfort, but disease. So obviously it plays a major, major role in our world in terms of health.
It does. And I'm so excited. I'm coming from a brand. I'm coming from Mrs. Meyers, which is a naturals brand, you know, very exciting in today's world. Obviously, very relevant right now because we sell a lot of hand soap. But moving on to Off and thinking about, you know, Off has really already had an incredible journey of enabling outdoor adventure, more so than just how do you protect yourself from mosquitoes, right?
It's, great purpose.
Yeah, exactly. It's a brand that you can get behind because I just drove 20 hours from Chicago to Park City so that I could enjoy outdoor adventure. And so even if it feels like such a functional thing, you know, repelling mosquitoes, you know, it really is something that I believe in is how can I enable people to go enjoy the outdoors more and to have less concerns about it and feel like they can spend time with family and friends outdoors, especially as we can't gather inside, right? Especially as people are thinking about, oh, I'm going to go see my friends at the park and we're going to stand 6 feet away from each other and chat. You know, you want to make sure you're protected and you're able to really live in the moment.
What would you say is the key to success for today's CMO? If you said data, you wouldn't be the only one. At Deloitte, however, we believe data is only half of the equation. The other half, story. Because data is the language of business, but story is the language of humans. And we believe the most successful CMOs know how to harness the power of both data and story. To learn more about Deloitte's CMO program and how we can help today's CMOs succeed, visit cmo.deloitte.com. All right, I'm going to leave this podcast right now and go get an espresso and a croissant in honor of Cannes and turn it over to the interviewer's chair, to Suzanne Tosolini, my colleague, who's going to ask a few questions about leadership, culture, creativity. Suzanne, it's all yours.
Great. Okay, great. Thank you for all of those great insights. Let's talk, first of all, about what attracted you to your companies early in your careers. So in today's business environment, you know, we hear constantly at the CMO Accelerator from those leaders how competitive it is and how hard it is to attract the top talent today. And so let's go back for a little to think about early in your careers when you selected those jobs and companies. You know, if you can remember, what was it that really made you choose them, and share with our listeners, what was it that made those the best choices for you? So maybe let's start with Molly on this one. You know, you've been there for some years, but hopefully you can take your mind back to when you first took your job. What was it that made you take that job?
Well, it's very
easy. This is all a top talent group. I know it wasn't their only job offer, so.
Oh, stop. No, really. Keep going. Keep talking about how amazing we are. So it's very easy for me to go back because, like you said, I've been at SCJ a number of years. I've never worked for another company. I got recruited when I was a junior in college. So I take my mind back, you know, really to my prime, of course. I was at Michigan at the Ross School of Business. And so it is a very competitive market where we've got a lot of companies coming in, talking to us about, you know, what is CPG? What is brand management? You know, what kind of marketer do you want to be? And there were two things about SCJ that really drew me into the company. The first was the people. I still am in contact with everyone who recruited me, whether they're at SCJ or not, because I just walked up to them and I felt like we vibed. We just really vibed. And I felt like I could be my authentic self. And, you know, I didn't feel like I had to fake it. I didn't feel like they were faking it. There was just so much genuine, it just flowed. And everyone was so welcoming and warm. And I felt like I could feel from them what the culture of the company was and that the company had sent the right people onto campus to really show me, like, this is what the company is all about. And the second thing, which people really leads to culture and the kind of culture that you have. And one of the things that really stuck out in my mind is I went to a lot of corporate presentations. I'm sure we all did, right? Where they give you the whole deck on here's who we are as a company. Here's who started us. Here's the brands we have. Here's what your internship would look like. And the slide about culture for a lot of companies had a statement, right? About here's what our culture is. Here's who we are. And the company, the organization that I have been working for 5 years now, they didn't have a statement. They just said, our company culture is all about our people and it's created by our people. And we can't tell you about it because you just have to feel it. And if you don't feel it, then we're probably not the right place for you. But the fact that they didn't try so hard to tell me what their culture was and just said, you can feel it from our people. You can feel it from who we are and who we've always been. That was something that just left such an impression for me. It was like the absence of a statement was a statement in itself. And to this day, when I'm actually very involved in recruiting now in campus recruiting, and I go back to Michigan multiple times a year to go recruit top talent out of Ross. And people say, you know, what's your company culture? And I say, you know, talk to any of us. We are the culture. We create the culture. It really is just a people first place where you can feel like you can be yourself. And, you know, I can try and give you a statement about it, but it probably wouldn't capture it for you.
Mm-hmm. That's great. So Grace, what about you?
I would echo what Molly's saying. I really think the people culture, it's almost like a sense of family. Everywhere I've worked with has very much become almost like a work family for me. So I definitely think that's critical, just to kind of have those real connections with people. Because you spend so much time at work, you need to feel like you're part of a bigger team. But certainly for me, my career, so I graduated the year of the recession. And so I was like, what do I want to do? I went to university in Manchester. I was like, right, well, I need to move to London because that's where all the jobs are. So I moved to London. I applied for a graduate scheme at an agency and got in. And I did maybe 2 years at the agency. It was an out-of-home agency. And I actually, do you know, one thing I would really recommend, particularly for CMOs, is I would really recommend, especially your graduate levels, really try and, if you can, set up any sort of scheme that gets them into an agency side, because even if they want to be client side, I think having that agency experience and understanding what it's like to be agency side actually really did benefit me longer term. Even though I've now stayed client side, I think I can understand what it's like to be in an agency to some extent. So I think that was a really useful benefit. It wasn't so much the culture that led me to different companies. It's more a natural progression of things that I was interested in. So I moved from agency to a company called Superdrug, who are kind of like the CVS of in the UK. They're a health and beauty retailer. And that was pretty much led at the time. I liked beauty products. I was like, I could see myself working for this company. And it was very much that the role was creating their TV adverts, so helping them create their first TV adverts that they hadn't done before. So I was like, oh, this is interesting. I'm really enjoying this. It's creative. I enjoy creativity. I enjoy writing briefs, etc. So I kind of went down that road and then moved for about 3 years after that, moved on to Unilever. And that progression was very much, I enjoy making adverts. Which company is making the best adverts at the moment? And at the time, for me, it was Unilever. So I was like, I'm going to apply for Unilever because they just seem to create good work. And thankfully got the job at Unilever. And then just developed myself again. Like I say, it was really a natural progression. I became very quickly involved in their adverts around YouTube. So Dove Sketches, North Flavour of Home, all of that stuff, very much in those war rooms and kind of very hands-on in terms of optimizing video views, etc., building creativity that really connects with people. Absolutely loved it. And through that, I was like, maybe I should go and work for YouTube, hence why I moved onto YouTube from that. So I think I've just very much followed what my interest was. The one thing that I'd say, if there's more junior people listening to this podcast, is I didn't ever get to a stage where I applied for lots of jobs. I always thought about, what is it that I really want to do? What's my passion? What will get me out of bed in the morning? And so I applied for jobs that I was like, you know what? This is, and I've always had a gut feeling for a job when I've seen it. I'm like, that's the job that I really want, and throw everything into applying for that job and really make sure I give it my all. And so I feel like that's benefited me as I've developed through my career. And now I've been at YouTube for 4 years. And I think the culture of Google, Molly mentioned this earlier, but it's almost like flat. You can literally, I mean, every Friday they do something called YTF, which is where everyone does a town hall together, and you can submit questions to literally like the CEO, Susan Wojcicki, and she will answer them. That always blows my mind. Like a few weeks ago with the coronavirus, someone just asked them, what are your three coping methods in isolation? I'm like, where else could you have a company where you ask that as a question and then the CMO will answer it? Like, it's just, I think that sort of openness and transparency is really incredible about Google. And I really haven't seen that at any other company. I wish and I hope that other companies kind of start to take that approach a little bit more, because that's not easy. I can't imagine how daunting it must be as a CEO of a company to have any question asked and you have to answer it. But definitely as someone more junior in the company, I fully appreciate that is something that anyone can do, and that sort of transparency I think is phenomenal.
Oh, thank you. So Sam, what about you? I mean, as you you joined Red Bull back in 2013 or something, obviously a very, you know, special culture and stuff there. So what was it attracted you there?
I mean, I think to be honest,
the sexiness of the brand.
I mean, for me, it's easy. It's a no-brainer. I mean, I am, of course, very biased, but I viewed Red Bull as one of the coolest brands in the world. And I absolutely knew that I wanted to go there to try and make an impact and do things. And I was very fortunate over the course of 6 or 7 years to be able to do that and consequently grow into the position of a global brand manager, which was phenomenal. I think what's probably more poignant to ask from my perspective is, if I was moving now, what would I be looking for?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, consequently, I left Red Bull to found my own business, which is really an offshoot of the fact that they empower you so much and fill you with so much confidence and belief that you do want to, as a cliche, spread your wings and mm-hmm. do your own thing. But right now, I would be judging a future company. I would be looking for, what's the impact that I can have at this business? Can I make a meaningful impact regardless of the size of the organization? Personally, I wouldn't go somewhere where I don't believe that I can genuinely make a difference. So that would be the very first thing off the bat. Secondly, of course, who am I working with? It'd be an enormous contributing factor. Is this direct manager someone who is not necessarily going to grow me or guide me, but certainly not someone who's going to stifle me or play politics or hinder me? Because what I want to do is really see, can I make an impact? Can I make a difference? And then the third thing, I guess what I now would keep in mind, I've been very fortunate. When I reflect from more of a business perspective, I think one of the reasons Red Bull is such a successful business is because it's still privately held. And what that means as a result of that is, as an employee, this culture means that you can take real risks. And if I convinced one person, I was able to go and do something. And as a result of that, working with Google directly, I called up my counterpart there and I said, guys, as part of this joint business plan, you have, I mean, forget the silly percentage discounts that we get on media spend. Who cares? We can all do that. Let's look at what technology you have and what your business aim is. This would have been 2016, 2017. What is it that you guys want to achieve as a business? And they said, this is the year we want virtual reality to get big. So then I turned around and I said, what assets do we have as Red Bull that can support that and make that happen? And we teamed up on a project called Red Bull Air Race, where we created the first ever live stream in virtual reality. And that was by working with Google as counterparts and saying, let's do something that benefits us both. And the media value that we gained from that was phenomenal. So, I mean, I would be looking, a bit of a long answer to an easy question, but I'd be looking for a business where I'm able to do stuff like that and where the person I'm reporting into encourages things like that. It's like mm-hmm. slightly more lateral thinking and leveraging just assets and relationships in different ways. That would be what would attract me. And to come back to the point I made, because Red Bull was privately held, it was very easy to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And if I was going to a big public company, the conversation that I would have very directly with the CMO or the hiring manager is, what's possible and what's not possible? And how much are we playing for quarterlies? And how handcuffed am I going to be to short-term results? And if I am, that's fine, but I want to know the metrics I need to hit so I can ensure that we can smash them and then do this stuff above. But what I would never be interested in is going somewhere where we're playing a game based on share price, based on short-term goals, and based on those metrics.
Right. Well, you know, I'm going to get into my next question now, which is all around culture. And interestingly, the first question around what attracts you to jobs, you know, very quickly gets to culture, right? So you've already told some of these stories, but I'll ask you and see if you have another story which might be interesting for the listeners. You know, culture is one of the big leadership challenges today. How do I create a culture that can not only attract talent, but how do I maintain that culture and advance it so that it retains employees as well? And it's a culture that's doing the right thing every time you hit a hiccup or a crisis or something. So that's a big leadership challenge and one of the most important elements to satisfy and motivate employees. So I thought it might be interesting if each of you shared a story, just a story that sort of exemplifies what great culture is to you, that exemplifies the kind of culture that as you move into being leaders, that's the kind of culture I want to be part of. And maybe you have a story from one of your roles or jobs or companies that you think exemplifies that. So maybe we'll just start with, Grace.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of a story in the back of my mind that exemplifies it. But I really do think my experience of setting culture, particularly for CMOs, I think you have to live what you want the culture to be, right? Not too often, but I've seen in the past CMOs, like you do these, yearly surveys where you test how the company feels, and they'll see something like, I don't know, people want more transparency, and the CMO will go, oh, great, wait, let's ask HR to organize a transparency workshop. And I don't know, you stand around in a room throwing tennis balls at each other, like, and catching them. We've all been in those workshops, and you're like, I don't know if that really helped with the transparency, but so I think actually when I've seen that work is when the CMOs have taken action personally and taken it on board for themselves to change that culture with the help of other people, with the help of their leadership team. To give an example, when I worked at Unilever, they actually had that exact same issue. They had people felt disconnected from leadership, they did a survey, and that came out, and that they just didn't feel like a connection with leadership more broadly. And so at the time, Keith Weed was the CMO, who everyone adores, Keith. And he was like, do you know what? I am personally going to take it upon myself to be more connected to people. So from that point on, every single morning when he'd walk into the office, he'd walk around the desks and he'd say good morning, and he'd chat to people about the weekend, how their weekend was, and really sort of like, one time he bought apples that he'd grown himself and handed them all, literally walked around with a box of apples being like, does anyone want an apple? But he really, and I know that's such a small tiny thing, but he really made this effort, which is around people not feeling connected, people not feeling that sort of personable relationship. And he really changed that. It would be quite easy for him to just walk into the office, go straight to his office, close the door and do his meeting, right? But he really took on board that feedback and made a really tangible effort to, when he walked in the morning, just to walk around the desk, see how people were doing, chat about their day, chat about their weekend. And it's a really small thing, but I definitely think that really helped. That really just kind of made it feel a little bit more like that family culture at a leadership level. So like I say, I know it's a very small thing, but I do sometimes think just identifying where people are feeling pressure points and going, as a CMO or as a leader, what can I personally do? Don't just put that onto HR or put that onto like training and development people. Actually look at yourself and go, what can I personally do to change that culture? I think is
a great story.
Normal thing.
That's a great story. Yeah, little things, and that's why they love this session at the CMO Accelerator, because of those little things. So that's great.
And Suzanne, may I intersect? I just listened. I was just on a 1 hour long interview with Keith, sponsored by the Institute for Real Growth. Mark DeSwan Ahrens interviewed Keith. It's online. It's a beautiful hour of stories and lessons, just like this one. You know, he's out of the role in Unilever now. He's even more circumspect. And it is a lovely 1 hour lesson in how to do leadership and marketing. So I recommend it for all of our listeners.
So Molly, any fun story that you recall?
Yes. So I have a couple things. The first is that, just talking about, you know, what everyone's been saying about transparency with leadership, the VP of North America of the organization that I work for now, has just been incredible through the entire COVID-19 pandemic, and has been hosting, a forum for, you know, talking about what it means for the company, you know, what it means, you know, if the office were to reopen someday, or, you know, I work at a company that makes disinfectants and hand soap and things like that. So it's very important that we're aware of what's going on with supply chain and things like that. And he opens up a forum for people to ask questions, where people can upvote questions that they want to hear answered. And he'll leave about 15, 20 minutes for questions. And if he, you know, he'll go through the ones that he can get to. And if there are questions he doesn't get to, it doesn't matter if no one has upvoted them. He sends out an email every Friday that addresses every single question that's been asked, so that everybody feels like they've been heard. And there could be 50 questions, and he still goes through and answers every single one. And I just admire him so much as a leader for doing that. His name is Al Schroeder. I'm going to put him on blast because I think he's fantastic. He's the VP of North America, executive vice president, I believe, for SEJ. And he's just a phenomenal leader and someone that really inspires me, and that I feel like, I just feel like is fantastic. But I'm going to tell a little bit more of a vague story, because I don't want to put anyone on blast for this one. But I did have a situation somewhat recently where, like I said, organization's very flat. And so I have a senior leader who I love and who I think is fantastic. And we follow each other on Instagram. And I know this person follows some other young marketers on Instagram as well. And this person had posted something on their Instagram story about a social cause that I thought could potentially get misconstrued and make people think that this leader was thinking something they weren't or was supporting something they weren't. And I was really scared to say something because I thought, you know, this person is four levels above me and I respect them deeply. And I don't want them thinking that, you know, I'm not respecting what it is they're trying to say or trying to support. But I want to make sure they, you know, this person is always open to learning. And so I want to make sure they know, you know, what's going on right now, you know, whenever it was in the world, being vague. And so I actually DM'd this person, slid into their DMs, if you will, and basically said, you know, I love that you are posting about this, but it definitely could get misconstrued. And I just want you to be aware of how it could get misconstrued. And it was a frightening moment for me because I was like, I don't want to damage my relationship with this person. And the response was just, oh my gosh, thank you so much for coming to me. Thank you for saying something. I want to learn. I want to grow. I want to support. And so, you know, what can I do better? What can I do next time? And, you know, just having that feeling of this senior person in my organization who I follow on Instagram and felt like I could DM to, you know, say something about something completely unrelated to work and have this response of, wow, thank you so much. I am so open to learning from you. What else can I learn? How can I grow? I was just, I mean, it almost brought me to tears because I was just so proud to work for this person. And felt so proud of this person for being so open to learn from someone, you know, so many levels below them. So just, you know, it's inspiring.
That's great. So Sam, lastly, then you, obviously this is, I'm sure, very top of mind for you because you've got your company, your own company now. So you're creating culture, albeit with a much smaller group of people. So you probably don't have to worry so much about people to people interaction and being in touch with people, but you know, you must be proactively thinking about how you want to create a culture. So is there any stories from your past that you sort of took with you?
Absolutely. I mean, what a fantastic question. The first thing that I got to point out, because it really struck me though, is what a fascinating story from Molly there, in the sense of more broadly, in the sense of the dynamic now between the blurred lines between work and personal life. So, I mean, Jim, can you imagine 10 or 15 years ago, you getting the equivalent, I guess, of a letter through your door saying, I've seen that you said this belief at the golf club and here's how I feel about that. I mean, what a fascinating thing to think about if you're 40, 45 plus and thinking about managing a younger demographic. Or even if you're 30 and you're thinking about the new people coming through and your younger employees and how, of course, they follow you on social. And of course, they're judging your personal beliefs and perhaps even tying that to the business's principles. I mean, that has got to be a fundamental shift that has happened over a very, very short period of time. So I would find it super interesting from a senior leadership perspective about this sense of you're always on, or you have to be totally private and editing or redacting everything you do. And I think that's pretty fascinating, because now to come back to your question, Suzanne, I think, of course, we all know that culture starts at the top. We all know that culture trickles down. And Molly just perfectly highlighted that there's no lines anymore between work and not work and between a company's beliefs and perhaps an individual's beliefs. And we saw just 1 month ago at CrossFit, the CEO needing to stand down because he put out personal beliefs that his employees and stakeholders and franchisees disagreed with vehemently. And I wonder if this would have happened 10 years ago. But to come back to my story, I think rather than having a direct anecdote, I would say that it really, I think, again, there's two prongs to this. There's number one, which is culture starting not with individuals, but with the business. And is the company standing up for their beliefs? So we look at Ben & Jerry's and what they've done around racism. And I could think of many, many companies who claim to take a seat at the table, but aren't actually proactively doing anything, be it for fear of backlash from politics or elsewhere. Similarly, we had the same debate 5 years ago at Cannes surrounding women and female empowerment, and the people that were shouting loudest had no females on their board, for God's sake. I think there's so much virtue signaling within the industry that I would be, if I was a CMO, I would be really looking in the mirror very, very hard and not playing this game of virtue signaling about what does my workforce want to see or what is the message that I want to put out in a press release. But I would be really saying, What do I want to leave as a legacy in this company? And if I need to make a stand and put my feet down and say something to the CEO or upset shareholders in a way that Amazon does fantastically, by the way, not so much on a moral point, but more from the point of saying we're going to take hits for the next three quarters and we don't mind about that because this is part of the long-term gain. I think it would be fantastic to see businesses stopping the virtue signaling and fundamentally aligning their actions with their beliefs. So that's the company mm-hmm. standpoint. And then again, the people side's easy. We all know it's transparency, it's empowerment, and it's accountability. And if a manager's transparent about, here's what I want you to achieve, here's what we believe, etc., if they empower people to have the room and understand their beliefs, and then if they hold them accountable for their work and whether they stick to that or not, that's all the culture of a business is. So I think it's one of those things where when you boil it down, the ingredients are very, very simple, but depending on the chef, you can get something that tastes good and is a great culture, or something that's absolutely horrible.
Hey, Sam, I don't know if you saw Jeff Bezos' most recent Instagram post or one of his most recent Instagram posts, but if you haven't seen it, he literally screenshotted an email that a white supremacist sent him and said, you know, you are the kind of customer I'm happy to lose and this kind of hate cannot hide in the shadows. And just seeing something like that from the richest man in the world, it was just like... wow, you know, it is just a completely different relationship that leaders have with their employees, with their consumers, with everyone now because of social media and, you know, the ability to communicate so quickly and easily with people.
Well, I feel old now, Molly, because I love Instagram, but I don't actually follow these business leaders on Instagram. You've added a whole new dynamic.
Oh, now I'm going to start doing it. That's why my follower ratio is so off, you know, because they never follow me back.
Your website is the front door of your business. But the way teams build and optimize it is simply broken. Stuck between inflexible templates and cumbersome code-dependent solutions, there's a better, faster way. Enter Webflow, a visual-first platform that empowers you to create freely. Experience a CMS where you can build dynamic content without code. Native localization that lets you translate your site in one click to reach global audiences. And third-party apps and integrations so you can build faster. Now you can ship web pages in weeks instead of months and save millions in development costs. These are the real results for companies like Orange Theory, Dropbox, and IDEO. Get started today at webflow.com. Webflow, more than a website builder.
And I want to respond to Sam's comment. Sam, when I was CMO, they were not pushing letters under my door. We actually had email. We had Google and we had Facebook too. So, but to be a bit more serious, one insecurity senior leaders have is they're not getting good data. And people spin them, and people try to influence them, and people are managing communication, even with leaders who really, really want transparency, truth, and honesty. So please, everyone listening who's a young leader, your senior leaders want to hear from you. They really do, and they want the unfiltered truth. Because only then can they act, and can they act on their values and beliefs. So very, very powerful leadership trait. And most leaders want that. They really do. And they're insecure. They're not getting it.
So I'm going to skip then to, I think this will be probably our last question around creativity. So Cannes is obviously all about creativity, right? And both in the Young Marketers Academy and the CMO Accelerator, we spent a lot of time focused on creativity from all different angles. And all of you, I mean, you, the three of you have all worked on some great Cannes award-winning, iconic pieces of work. At all of your various roles. So I'd love to hear from you what leadership behavior has enabled you to do your best work in leading creativity. Sam, I think you touched on it a little bit in one of your responses already, but what is it that really you've worked on different stuff to varying degrees, I'm sure some were better than others. What was it that really was the most empowering thing for you to get great creative work?
I was going to say, I can give you a very short and very sharp answer that's actionable instantly.
Okay.
It's backing up words with budget. Done. There you go. That's it. If you empower people, if you trust people, if you trust the input of their data and their insight, and you believe in their ability to execute with their agency, you carve off that budget. And similarly, in my role as a global brand manager, where we were sparring with countries and counterparts, it was having the foresight to allow many, many country managers, where you know that they're sharp and they're shrewd, to do things where you give them air cover and they break the rules, and you allow them, by tucking away some budget and not reporting it up and being a bit cheeky and a bit risky, you allow them to take their new gamble. And you know what? Every single global best practice that I've ever seen at the companies I've worked at are always ones which originally broke the rules. And you need, whether you're in middle management and you need the balls to give them the air cover and save it from your boss, or whether you're at the top and you just need to say, you know what, we're going to put this budget aside and it might come back with no return of investment, or it might be something magical. That's it. Empower people, give them budget, done.
Fantastic. Thank you. I love that. I love that story, because that is very true. In big organizations, our best practices changed because somebody broke the rules and did something that just was super successful. Yeah, fantastic. Molly, what about you?
Yeah, I would say a couple of things. I think very much to Sam's point, empowering your people and defending your people, right? So how can you give your people the autonomy to make decisions without always having to go back up to leadership? And then, you know, when there's pushback from the global team, public affairs, legal, whoever it is, defend your people, fiercely defend the work that they're doing and the work that they've created, because you know you've empowered them to do their best work. The other thing I would say is rethink your agency strategy, right? Think really hard about how you're leveraging your agencies. We had an example where we were working on a platform and we wanted to activate in so many different ways. And my coworker was more involved in this than I was, so I don't want to take the credit for it. But the way that, you know, she took to leadership this concept of, I'm going to give 7 different agencies this platform, and then I'm going to see how they can activate it by doing what they're best at, right? We're not giving our creative agency, you know, some way to activate PR. We're not giving our talent agency some way to activate out of home. We are going to different agencies that specialize in different capabilities and watching them do what they do best. And that's going to have the highest ROI, and that's going to make the work really special. Because getting your agencies to collaborate with each other, sit around a table and talk about, this is what we specialize in, this is what you specialize in, let's go out and do it. There are so many incredible agencies out there now that are doing things differently and thinking differently. And that doesn't mean stop working with who you're working with. It just means really think strategically about, what is this particular agency best at, and how can I empower them to do what they're best at to make this an incredible activation? So that's something I think, you know, having leadership rethink the strategy of agencies, especially as digital becomes bigger. You know, we've brought on an agency that specializes just in Amazon and Amazon search and display and how we optimize. You know, we've got agencies that specialize just in experiential. And then we've got our big agencies as well. So thinking about, how can they all work together to deliver this incredible 360 media to shelf execution and activation, where every single piece of it is optimized because the people who do it best made it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. Okay, Grace, what about you?
Yeah,
You've worked on some of those iconic pieces too.
So I think the things that are most supportive of creativity are, especially in today's climate where things are so rapidly changing, like even on a weekly basis currently things change, knowing that you have to react and you have to do something, and then empowering your teams to be able to do stuff, and knowing that you might not get it right, being comfortable with you might not get it right. So going back to the example that I gave earlier with the coronavirus, and I'm going, we should put something out there, we should help people, we should give them content that will keep them occupied whilst they're living at home and feel connected and part of a community. 2 weeks later, we had a video creative that landed, and that was literally driven from having someone like Angela Corton, who's like, I don't know whether this is the right thing, but we have an idea, we believe in it, and we just have to sprint and get it out. And I think believing in stuff, even though you might not necessarily, it might not land well, is critical, and just running with it and putting it out in the world. Too often I hear of brands that spend like 2-3 years developing an idea, and by the time it launches, they've missed the boat. And so I think, yeah, just trying to be reactive, trying to put things out and testing and learning is critical to creativity. And I think to use the example that Sam gave, I think we're definitely seeing that with the Black Lives Matter movement. Ben and Jerry's, they were like, we know what we stand for. We're putting out this statement and we believe in it. Nike, like that's what you need in this day and age. You need to stand by what you believe in. And you need to kind of go creatively, we have got to put a message out. How do we very quickly gather things and put something out in the world? And kind of being present over being perfect, I think is critical at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So with that, Jim, I'm going to hand it back to you, I think.
Suzanne, you did a beautiful job. We should co-host another one together, if you're game. Maybe, she says. Okay, listen to the three of you. I want to end this beautiful conversation, so wonderful in so many ways, with one question for each of you. And that is, what is the one singular piece of advice for senior leaders listening on how to lead a more creative, inclusive, energetic, winning, values-driven organization? One piece of advice. And you've shared many things around this over the last hour, but if there is one succinct piece of advice from your heart, what is it? Let's start with Grace.
Cool, no pressure. So for a long time, my biggest advice for anyone was always the harder you work, the luckier you get. And actually, I've learned that that's not always true, but I don't think that's the best piece of advice. I actually think in this day and age, and I don't know whether this is as I've grown through my career or as the world has changed, to Sam's point earlier about using the email example and DMing people on Instagram that Molly said. But I think the biggest advice I could give now is fostering an environment for uncomfortable conversations. So how often, either from a junior member or from a CMO, how often have you got in a room and said, do you know what? Let's just have an uncomfortable conversation. Tell me where your head's at. Tell me what you think. What are we doing wrong? What doesn't work? What don't you like? And how do we improve that? And I feel like sometimes people are so scared. It's not easy to go into a room. And to Molly's example that she gave earlier, it's not easy to call someone out and say, actually, you did this and I'm not sure that's right. It's not easy to say when you've been given a product or a brief to work on, it's not easy to go, actually, I don't believe that this is the right strategy that we're taking. And I think we should do this. That's not easy to be able to say that to, especially to a CMO. Like, you're like, oh no, I just believe in the work and I'll just make it great. So I think if, back to your point earlier, that CMOs really want data, if they really want data and they really want insights, try and foster that environment. And maybe it is just starting a conversation, which is, we're going to have an uncomfortable conversation because that's what I want. And we're going to try and talk about this. And I want to hear the uncomfortable bits. And so I think getting more into that sort of world is critical in order to try and move things forward is my biggest piece of advice.
No, it's wonderful. It's wonderful. And it shows vulnerability and it shows imperfection. And I think we can all be better. We can all be better at understanding people in different perspectives. So I love that. Molly, how about you?
Well, Grace stole mine. I was going to say plug in. That was going to be my number one, was just plug into your people. But Grace spoke incredibly eloquently about that. So I'm going to leave that one. And I'm going to say, I think one of the second themes that we've talked about a lot, which I think is just so huge, is empower your people and challenge your people. You know, we want to feel like we can make an impact. We want to feel like we own, like we truly own the business, like we own the marketing, and like we own the strategy, right? And so give us that empowerment, that autonomy, and then challenge us. You know, we don't want to be bored. We want to be busy. We want to be challenged. We want to be stretched. We want to feel like, you know, when we're ready to take on that next role, we're already there because we've been challenged and stretched so much in our current roles. So that's how you keep us. Is continue to challenge us, continue to invest in our growth, and continue to empower us to be the best marketers we can be so that we go on to the next role. We take everything we learned and we're already feeling empowered. You know, we're not suffering from imposter syndrome. We're feeling like I'm here for a reason because I know this organization is supporting me and doing my best work.
All right. Last piece of advice comes from the founder of Generate, Sam. Close us out.
Jim, I was thinking really hard there whilst Grace and Molly were talking, and I think the single simplest thing that a leader can do that will make the single largest impact is to live the culture yourself, but then to communicate it fiercely. And the reason for that is because what you're probably not aware of is that you are so far removed in your ivory tower from all of your employees who aren't direct reports into you, especially if you're talking 10,000 person plus organization, that they simply aren't aware of how you act on a daily, weekly, monthly or quarterly basis. So simply trying to find a way to voice what you're doing more, I think will solve things overnight. And to use the tiny insight that Molly gave us, what I would probably do as a bit of a maverick, I would share publicly to the whole organization my Instagram link, and I'd make it public, or my Twitter handle, or whatever it is that I'm doing frequently. And I would allow people to follow it, because we heard from Molly, she wants to anyway. So why not let them in? Why not let them see what you do at the weekend with your family, how you respond to tough situations, and ultimately how you embody the values that you want them to have? So that's what I'd do.
Sam, that's beautiful. You know, I have this CMO podcast. This is a special edition. It has become very popular. And the two reasons, people want to hear what these people do, what is their work, and they want to hear how they spend their life, what they value, what they do with their time, what they're like as people. So it's just a piece of data from about 65 interviews and growing audience every month to support that strong statement.
It's interesting that in our, you know, we mentioned at the beginning that this marketing hotshot session is always a big hit, and you know, and it's not competing with lightweight stuff. So that says a lot that it is so highly rated. And I think the biggest aha, because when the young marketers leave the room, there's then discussion about it, and the biggest insight that the leaders seem to have is, pre that session, they're always wondering, why are these young people not coming to us and talking to us? And then they have the aha, like, I did not realize how kind of intimidating I am. And not because I'm an intimidating person, but because of the role or the, you know, with the location of my office or whatever it is. And they didn't realize. They think they're friendly, open people, and therefore people should come, but you have to do more. And so I think some of the things you've talked about are very easy ways to do more, you know, and make yourself more human as a leader.
Yeah, Suzanne, to that point, I don't know if you guys remember this, but someone from my company was in the CMO Accelerator program when I spoke on the panel. And it's all about being the kind of person where he is the kind of person where I felt comfortable enough to give honest answers, even though he was in the room. So
that's right, yeah.
As a leader, how do you make yourself that person that people feel comfortable going to and feel comfortable speaking honestly in front of, to the point where, you know, I was giving these somewhat humorous but mostly serious responses about what I wanted out of my leaders while staring one of my leaders directly in the face?
Well, Sam, Grace, Molly, I would like to hire each one of you. And I think everyone listening will as well. You're three remarkable people. I can't thank you enough for sharing who you are and what you value and your wisdom, insights, and humor. It's been a fabulous conversation. I can't wait to listen to it and relive it myself. So thank you. All the best to you through these times, and stay in touch. That was our conversation with the marketing hotshots. Suzanne, what I loved about this one was I just feel great. The inspiration I get from these three wonderful human beings in these difficult times we are living in, with health crisis, economic crisis, Black Lives Matter, they are wonderful human beings, wonderful leaders. I feel great that this generation is moving into more senior leadership. I just felt energized by that whole conversation. How about you, Suzanne?
Oh, for sure. I mean, you for sure finish it feeling inspired that the industry is in good hands with people like that coming up the ranks, and how they think so, you know, intentionally about their jobs and what they want to do in the world is just, you know, very inspiring. And, you know, we talked a little earlier about I guess the big insight when we run this at the CMO Accelerator is that this is really a human business, and our senior leaders kind of finish thinking, why don't these people come talking to me more? And then they learn from them. You know, it's not that easy. This is a human world where you need to make yourself accessible and human. And my hope is that these terrible things that we're living through right now are going to be catalysts to make that sort of humanity much more natural in the workplace, because, you know, now we're having meetings where you're in each other's kitchens, and that sort of makes everything a lot more human, right? And people have to put their values front and center by definition. So I'm very hopeful, really.
That's it for this episode of the CMO Podcast. If you found this helpful and entertaining, I would be so grateful if you could share our show with your friends. And I would be super happy if you subscribed so you can be updated as we publish new episodes. And if you really want to help, leave us a 5-star rating and a positive review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. The CMO Podcast is a Gallery Media Group original production.